It's the Koshcast. It's been a weekend full of debate about decisions. Were they bad calls? Were they called well? All we know is that we've got Stephen Caldwell on the pod, and we couldn't be any happier about it. We'll ask him your questions, as well as have a bit of Toronto FC discussion, and dive into the Premier League. It was a case of Bakayoko Ono for Chelsea as they lost to Watford. Kane and Klopp both reached 100 at Anfield, goals for Harry, miles an hour down the touchline for Jurgen, and it's augmented reality for Arsenal as they battered Everton, much like Phil Neville did his... Never mind. All this, Moomoo of the Week, and much more. The Koshcast with Stephen Caldwell. Get your head on. Hello and welcome to the Koshcast on underthekoshblog.com and at under_thekosh on Twitter. My name is Alex and we have more than a full house tonight. Roshe Rana is here.
Hello, hello.
Bernie is here.
Yup.
Mohamed is here.
Hi everyone.
And joining us, former Burnley star, Toronto FC legend and TSN analyst, Stephen Caldwell. How are you?
I'm great, thanks for having me. It's nice to be back. I really enjoyed my time last time.
Yeah, we were thrilled you decided to come back.
You know, we've had a few repeat offenders.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah. No one's run away so far, so we're doing all right. No, thank you for joining us. It was an amazing weekend of football.
Yeah.
So why don't we dive straight into the Premier League?
Speaking of diving.
Very apt one.
Exactly. Shall we start then with Liverpool 2, Spurs 2 at Anfield?
Yeah, we should start there. I think Liverpool had always give us a really exciting games. I think we were talking, someone online was talking about how if you want to watch select Premier League games, make sure Liverpool's in there.
Yeah.
Liverpool, Arsenal, Liverpool City, Liverpool Spurs, they always produce really nice games, and this was no different. A game had a lot, it had everything. It had goals, it had dives, it had last minute excitement. I don't know, was it a fair result at the end?
Difficult to say, and the reason is because it was such a unique game. Liverpool are a unique team, in my opinion. They've got the front three players who are just scintillating, and they get the ball forward really early, and they could cause any team in the world problems when they're pressing high, and it's so exciting. Yeah, you have Spurs who dominate the possession and played really good football. I even thought in the first half they were the better team, although they looked a bit sloppy. Obviously, the first goal was a mistake by Dyer. And there was mistakes all over the park because of the high press of Liverpool. But, and this is why I love Spurs and I love Pochettino. I think he's one of the best managers in world football right now, certainly up and coming. He sticks to his guns, and there's a reason for that, because if you compromise on playing football at that level, then it just becomes easy to feel a bit of pressure from the crowd or a player or a position in the league and throw a ball forward or play a percentage pass or lump, as they say, and he just will not allow that, and his players have bought into that 100%, and I just was and had such admiration for the way they played that game, because I watched the halftime show on the channel it was on in Canada, and it was Shearer and Sherwood, and I thought their analysis was pretty poor. They were going on about, you know, Spurs were you know, the second best team, and they were taking too many chances, and I just thought that they were wrong, and I'm glad that the second half kind of proved them wrong, because Spurs were the better team. And saying that, Liverpool have a guy called Salah who's just absolutely amazing. Ridiculous, and with the pressure of Firmino, it's just another level. Mane was a bit off to his normal standards, but the three of them put together just make them such a dangerous team, and so it was a very intriguing game, and I guess in the end, just because of the different attributes, a draw probably was a fair result.
Would you pip Salah over De Bruyne, or the other way around for player of the season so far? I'm assuming if those
I would say Salah, just for the pure reason that I think De Bruyne is in a better side. I love De Bruyne, he's an incredible player, and I think the development of him game we could talk about for 30 minutes, because he now looks like an out-and-out midfielder. He looks strong. His legs are like tree trunks. His body's like, he's bulked up. You can see it considerably.
Him playing centre of the park wasn't actually something that people thought about
never
before.
Even
I think Pep switched his position, right?
So yeah.
I mean, he used to play on the right, and then he plays the 10. And
yeah.
But he's almost box-to-box now. You see him like take it off the centre-backs and, you know, ping it.
But I have to agree with Mo and Steven as well. Salah's done things this season that are just unbelievable. Like, that goal itself, people are talking about Messi.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when you're talking about him in that context, even whether it's right or not, you know that you're seeing something amazing.
Salah has that individual streak about him. Like Steven said, it's really less about the team. With De Bruyne, it's more about the team and how they all click together. And of course, De Bruyne is a goal. But Salah is doing things that are individual. He takes the ball halfway down the field and scores a goal. And he does things, you know, this game, last minute, almost last minute goal where he took on three players and put it beautifully over. Like, that's smart. And to have that millisecond decision to go high into the net like that, because anywhere else would have been saved, I think that shows something about him.
And so, we're not the only ones to compare Salah to Messi. Even Jamie Carragher thinks that Salah is comparable to Messi. What do you think about that?
I don't think you can compare anybody to Messi, in all honesty. I think that goal had elements of Messi. I don't see the same player. I see an out-and-out, I don't know if the word striker, because he plays wide, but I just see a guy who can... He's finishing first and foremost is incredible. When he gets that chance away, he just passes it in the corner. He makes it look like it's really easy, but I see a more kind of dynamic player in terms of his front play. Messi, for me, is just like the complete player, can gel up the entire team and just sort of make something out of nothing from a kind of middle of the park area. I think Messi does his best work when he drops and then he starts driving forward. Salah, for me, like I said, and I think this is probably a bit of the reason why Liverpool are playing so direct, is why would you mess about? Just get that ball forward.
Yeah.
One of the front three are going to cause havoc, and once one of them get in the ball, it's a 4v3 or a 3v3 or whatever it is, you fancy them every single time to score a goal. Absolutely. So to me, they're kind of playing... I was disappointed in Robertson and less Alexander-Arnold, but I felt like Robertson just kept playing it up the line. And I didn't see the same level of football there for Liverpool, but I think it's partly because of that front three. No real comparison to Messi for me, because he's on another level, but in my opinion, the best player in the Premier League right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that about the front three and how that affects how the rest of the team play, because we kind of saw that with Barcelona last season, where the midfield wasn't really doing anything.
Yeah.
They were getting bypassed because the front three was so good that there was nothing really else to do but get it up to Messi, Suarez, and Neymar, and they just did their thing.
But also, is Liverpool's midfield, does it have enough quality there to play through them? I mean, lost Coutinho, Lallana seems to be off the pace, Ox is hot and cold, so you've got defensive-minded players in Henderson, Wijnaldum, Chan.
Yeah.
You don't really have a creative outlet, so you just go... They really do more of kind of controlling tempo, defending, and you just let it go through them to the striker.
Well, is Jordan Henderson even really good enough? Because I feel like some of the most dynamic performances Liverpool have had this season have been when either one or both of Wijnaldum and Chan have been playing.
Yeah, I think it was telling that Henderson came off pretty early in the game and he looked a bit disappointing for me. Obviously, passed the armband on to Milner, but you know, when he's sort of coming off so early in the game and he's supposed to be the captain, I think that tells you that if Liverpool are going to seriously challenge this unbelievable Manchester City side and be contenders at the highest level of the Premier League and European football, he's one of the ones that's going to get replaced, in my opinion.
Well, they're getting Keita at the start of next season. But exactly. I think when they gave Henderson the captain's armband, they kind of put themselves in the corner a little bit, because that means now you're starting every game, you're supposed to be playing every game, and now they're slowly going to have to try and kind of get him out of the team, because I don't think he's good enough.
I mean, as an Arsenal fan, you know that there is also the option to just sell him to Barcelona. So, but speaking of defensive midfielders, I wanted to ask your opinion about Eric Dier, because he's a player I really like. I think he's probably England's best defensive midfielder at the moment. But I feel like he's Spurs' fourth best centre-back and possibly their second best defensive midfielder.
Yeah.
I know Wanyama's slowly coming back into full fitness, but I don't know. Dier has games where you don't really notice him and he's just kind of doing the basics, and that's fine. But then he does come up with some pretty incredible mistakes fairly frequently, or it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry to interrupt. He looks a little clumsy at times.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. I've never thought he was a great central midfield player. I always thought he could have been a very, very good centre-half. In the middle of the park, I feel like he's a little bit limited. His feet are a bit slow and his movements are a little bit slow. Now, I do think he'll get better in there if as he moves on. He's still pretty young. So I think as he gets more experienced, he'll be in better positions. But The new midfielder, that Kante, Keita type midfielder who's everywhere, they're sort of holding midfield but they press and they get back and they just seem to be in every area of the park. That doesn't really play into an Eric Dier type position. Even look at Dembele, his colleague alongside him, just incredible the way he drives forward with the ball. He's very attacking, yet he still sort of marshals that midfield area. So Yeah, I'd be a little worried if I was Eric Dier. And I think that when I was watching game on Sunday, I was actually thinking that they're probably a little disappointed that didn't they take the millions and millions that Manchester United supposedly offered in the summer, because arguably he's starting to play his way out of their best 11.
I mean, I'd be pretty worried as England if that's my best anchor man in midfield. I mean, you're going to a World Cup with Eric Dier, no offense, but he's a centre-back, basically a failed centre-back that's not good enough to play centre-back for Spurs. And now he's going to be your starting defensive midfielder.
Well, behind him is Drinkwater, maybe?
I mean, they played Wilshere there a few times during the qualifiers.
I think it's wide open, I really do. I mean, I don't think there's any great candidate, but Loftus-Cheek was playing his cell in there. He looks to be, you know, he's injured just now, so that would be a problem for him. Wilshere was playing really good football a few weeks ago. Henderson will probably be in the hunt, obviously. You know, so there's not really any great candidate, but I think Dyer's looking a little bit vulnerable just now, although I still feel he's a pretty good player. I thought it was a bit harsh on him on Sunday. Yeah, he didn't have a great game, but he's still a pretty good player.
It's like a big game. You can't always perform in all the big games. Yeah, you have 12 more games in the season for Dyer to make it up.
Yeah.
Before we move on from this game, let's talk quickly Wanyama's goal.
I mean,
we thought after we saw Wanyama's goal that, I mean, Salah just produced that other one, but Wanyama's goal was literally unstoppable. When you say unstoppable, you look at that angle right from behind the goal, and it curves right at the last moment into that top corner, and it's just unsavable.
It was a dream goal, and I love goals like that. I live for those kinds of goals, but I was actually in and out of this game, but the game was going on. And I was watching, I came and saw the TV, and I just kind of felt like a goal was coming, but I didn't expect it to be that kind of goal.
Pressure was mounting up, and you could see, you're right, you could see something happening, but not
But from the second it left his foot.
Yeah.
You cannot hit a better shot than that.
He knew it was in literally half a second after it left his foot. You could just tell that that was going.
And it was amazing how he started the moves. He played a good ball wide. Great substitution, because you're sort of thinking, why is he putting on Wanyama? But the guy's always thinking, I'm a huge fan of Pochettino, he's just amazing. And he puts Wanyama on, he plays it wide, and I thought it was a good ball in from Eriksen in the beginning. I thought Karius did well because Kane was lurking and he just couldn't get it out and high enough, and Wanyama came from nowhere and just hits this thing like a dream, you know.
If you watch it back, he actually comes from behind Oxlade Chamberlain, who's just switched off.
Yeah.
But
I heard the name Harry Kane and I thought, why don't we ask? Penalty or not?
Yeah, well, we've got two penalties. So let's talk about the first one.
Penalty or not. I'm in the no penalty camp on this one.
Well, I don't think it's a penalty.
I think he
throws himself forward and in the process hits the keeper. But like, if he just keeps running forward, like nothing happens, but you can't just jump.
But that happens all the time.
Yeah, it looks like contact.
I think, and we could talk about the offside, because that's just, the rule's so ambiguous, it's ridiculous. I don't even know it, and I played football for 18 years, and I'm in football still. It's just, who knows the rule? Like, it's just so weird that if Lovren just leaves that ball, he's offside, but the guy doesn't know he's offside. Like, I've played the game, you don't know when guys are offside. You got to react. It's split second, there's 40,000 people there, 50,000 people, and he tries to clear it, and then he's suddenly onside. It's just a ridiculous rule. So that needs to change. He was offside. And then I actually think it was a penalty.
Oh,
I know he played for it, but he gets there first in the movement of the goalkeeper. I think that it's so difficult for him to move round that goalkeeper at that point. You know, it's not his...
But he doesn't try to, is my problem.
Yeah, like, I know.
So you think he's played for it, but he's got enough contact, but I think there's enough in it that it's
justified.
I guess
it's tough.
On the concept of playing for it, is... I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Are you just being smart, or are we bending the rules a little bit? Because he said himself that he felt the contact and he went down.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. But how much contact is enough to put you down? These are different arguments that people have. Yeah. And they say, well, if you don't go down, your teammates will get mad at you. Rio Ferdinand said that recently. Yeah. I don't know where the line is for me.
I thought he knew if he got the touch first, Karius was going to come. He was going to feel the touch and go over.
Yeah.
I thought he did that. Right, take the second one, for example. Lamella got the slightest of touches if he even got it, and then he jumped in the air, you know. So for me, the second one was never a penalty. It's just ridiculous for the Lamella.
The amount of touches that all of a sudden players lose their knees from, like the same touches in midfield, nothing happens, you take the bump, you move on. But in the box, you don't want to take the bump.
But sometimes it's also really hard to tell if it was a significant bump.
Yeah, like, slow-mo. I mean,
for someone who's actually played the game, you've experienced a few bumps, but like, some are misleading.
No, it's very misleading, and you look back and you think, that was nothing, but during the game, it was quite a hit. Because you're moving at a fast pace, you know. So it's really easy to say after all these slow mos. But for me, Lamella's was not a penalty, and Kane's was. He was on the border, diving. But for me, there was enough contact to award it.
There was also the controversial bit where you could see the referees talking to each other, and I'm surprised they didn't cover their mouth or anything, because usually people do that. They just stood there in plain sight.
What he said?
So basically, they lip synced it and they talked about it. And basically, the linesman said, "I'm not sure if there was contact." The ref somehow still gave
for which one? Sorry,
for the first one for Harry Kane. And then the second one also. Basically, both of them, he agreed to one and disagreed to the other, opposite, and then. And then the people were pointing out, like, the linesman, like, did this little fist bump when, like, the penalty was given. Oh, is it really weird to not cover your mouth, at least? And there was a bit where they read the main referee, whatever his name was at the time.
John Moss.
John Moss was actually saying, talking to the fourth referee, asking if he saw anything on TV.
Yeah.
It was like, that's what VAR is. So it's like, do you want it or do you not want it? You can't make it up in the middle of the game.
They actually acknowledged in the statement, the referee statement, that that was a stupid thing to do. What I found interesting about the penalty was Harry Kane was on 606 last night.
Right.
And Ian Wright asked him why he put it down the middle, because he usually just smashed it into the corner. And Kane said basically, look, he looks back at his penalties, he looks where he's gone recently, he always changes it up, and he decided before the game that if he got one, that's where he was going. So I just thought that was cool.
And then he got, with the second one, he got his 100th goal.
Yeah.
That's quite an achievement. He's been a one-season wonder for 3 years now.
Yeah.
So good for him. One of the better / best strikers in the world, you have to say. His movement, the way he's always somehow available in the box with no one marking him up, even though with Spurs that's literally the only guy
he shoots well
mark.
He's a good
shot. He's
probably fair to say that now, if you consider true number nines, he probably is the best in the world right now if you think about form, right?
I would make that argument.
I think we have an issue sometimes with English player, people don't want to say it, but if you look at Cavani, Lewandowski, they're not scoring at the
rate
he's
scoring. The level too, you gotta start doing it in the Champions League, you gotta start doing it, it's just that level as well is the only thing.
That's fair.
Okay, let's move on to Arsenal.
Yep.
Arsenal beating Everton 5-1 after losing to Swansea the week before. So that's Arsenal, right? You got your ups and downs, and there's no middle. There's no consistency across the season. Yeah. See, I'm going to lose to the bottom team, and then I'm going to win 5-1 with two new signings, and everyone's happy, and it's great.
Well, your last home game, sorry, you won Crystal Palace, I think it was. You were rampant in the first half of the
Pretty much identical performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, Everton have provided this kind of relief to Arsenal twice this season. So, massive crisis, Everton. Massive crisis, Everton.
I was listening to Ars blog, and he was basically saying this is just Groundhog Day. It's repeat. Against Everton, it was the first game we got to play Sanchez, also Lacazette, for the first time ever. Killed that game, best game of our season. Everyone's like, here we go, we're going to win the league from here. Then nothing happens for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then now the exact same thing happened with Ozil, Mkhitaryan, Aubameyang, apparently. And now it's the same thing. Oh my God, we're going to win the league. And then, you know, it's football. What are you going to do? If you're not going to get excited about two new signings and winning 5-1, then what's the point, right?
I want to hear Stephen Caldwell's opinion on Everton's back three.
Yeah.
Like Keane, Mangala, and Williams.
Yeah.
It's not going to be good.
Could you legitimately do a better job than them right now?
No, I think Ashley Williams is, you know, in the autumn of his career, obviously he's been a great player. He's really struggled in the last, certainly this season, maybe the last 18 months. So I think he's on the way down, on the way out of the Premier League. Keane has really surprised me. He looked great at Burnley.
Yeah.
Listen, playing centre half for Burnley is fantastic. You sit in your slot, your header, you know, you kick it, and you just kind of like play to your strengths, and that certainly his strengths. So now he's been asked to come higher up the field and play a bit and be a bit more expansive, and it's affected him. And Magala's going to play. He's a new guy, but the change in formation for me was a little bit strange. I heard Allardyce's comments. They sort of made sense. You know, they watched Swansea do it. Swansea were absolutely brilliant at it. They had worked at that formation for a few weeks under Carvajal, you know, so it wasn't like he just went in there and sort of did it for that one game.
Right.
They did it to absolute perfection. Sam Allardyce had a result, a performance on the Wednesday. He then decided, without really any training to change to that same formation mm-hmm. with a group of guys that doesn't really fit them to play. Right. Like Mangala left side centre half to me is not a great choice. You know?
I heard someone with the opinion saying, you know, with all respect to Swansea, you're Sam Allardyce, you're in that 500 games in the Premier League bracket now. You've got a team with far more resources.
Yeah.
You think much better players, and your game plan is to copy Swansea from 3 days ago. Yeah. It just doesn't sound competent.
Well, even if you do that, right? Like, we're talking about an Everton team that, through Theo Walcott, had some pace. Bolasie has some pace, which is what we said they haven't had all season. And one thing that Arsenal have been susceptible to all season is pace down the wing. Yeah. So why not try that and use your best resources? But then he didn't do any of that at all.
But it's kind of odd because you can... Well, we've seen plenty of teams against Arsenal sit in a low block and just hit them on the break. But you don't need to be in a back three or five to do that. You can do that in two backs of four. And it was kind of an odd decision. I also thought, you know, there's weird things going on with team selection as well. Sigurdsson and Rooney both dropped. Mm-hmm. I totally take the argument that both of them in the same lineup is not ideal.
Yeah.
But having both of them out of the team, like, those are your chief creative threats. So you've got Nias and Walcott and Bolasie on the pitch, but who's passing it to them, really?
There's no creativity. Schneiderlin was in there. They're big problems there. And I don't think that Sam will always get a result, and there's no way that Everton will get relegated. There was no way they were going to get relegated under Ronald Koeman, in my opinion. But it's just a stopgap thing. There's no building there. They spent... $100 million. Yeah. How much was it? It was a lot of money to kind of go to that next level, and it never quite worked. But they've just went and got a stopgap to just kind of survive again. It doesn't really make sense to me. And signed a new guy, Cenk Tosun, looked brilliant at Besiktas, but spent a lot of money on him and dropped him after two or three games. Yeah. So, I think there could be some problems there at Everton in terms of, you know, team spirit and stuff. And I'm not really sure how long Sam will survive, because he's just a middle table manager.
Now Marco Silva's free.
I don't want to gloss over Arsenal though, because we did not get to be positive about Arsenal on this podcast too much, so I'm going to bring it back to that. So January transfer window, very un-Arsenal like. Everybody knew Sanchez was going to leave. Everybody thought City went to United. Arsenal fans weren't happy that it's United, Jose Mourinho, etc., etc. But you could see the logic with getting a player, because what are you going to do with 25 million from City? You're not going to spend it on anybody. So you got Mkhitaryan in, which, you know, is a good player, and the hope is that he fits Arsenal more. He feels that kind of confidence from Arsene Wenger as opposed to Jose Mourinho, etc., etc. And then the added bonus of Aubameyang last day, or whatever it was, a few days before the window closes, we've seen kind of the effect of the new backroom staff with Sven Mislintat, the new head of recruitment, Hans Fahmy, etc., etc. You know the details. And then all of a sudden, everybody's really excited to see how they would play. With Ozil signing a new contract is huge. I mean, I'd arguably say more important than those two signings. And then they clicked. To be fair, they clicked for the first 25, 30 minutes of the game. Mkhitaryan looked incredibly smart on the ball. His positioning off the ball. Yeah. Even his assists to both of them, to Ramsey, they were, I guess, deliberate. Yes. Like, it's kind of what Ozil would do on the left foot. Now, Mkhitaryan's similar on the right foot. It's pinging it into someone as opposed to like a, I don't know, I don't want to pick on him, but like an Iwobi float across to whoever, good luck. Yeah. Like, it's, you could see the style, you could see the
panache.
Yeah, and it was really exciting to watch. And Ramsey back from his sickness or injury or whatever it was. And I don't know, it looked exciting. The question is now, can you build on this? And the defense and midfield, you know, Xhaka, I don't know what your opinion is on him. Yeah. Can he anchor Arsenal's midfield moving forward?
No. He can't. You know, they want to challenge for the Premier League title. Xhaka can't challenge. Ramsey can't challenge.
Yep.
Mustafi can't challenge.
I agree completely.
He can.
They've got an aging goalkeeper who, you know, like, obviously 5-6 down the list you're going to replace, but still, he's aging. He's coming to the end.
Because Szczęsny, with his injury problem, he's not going to be.
The front line are terrific, and they always will be. But you know, what happens when they have that poor game or that tough game that you need to grind out, that every team that wins a league, even City, grind out in their, you know, very stylish fashion by keeping the ball. They get there, they get the result done. Arsenal haven't been able to do that for a number of years, and for me, the problems are still there. And while I think Aubameyang's a very, very, very good player, he has disciplinary issues, in my opinion, and they bought a guy for $50 million in the summer who was supposed to be that guy. So, you know, it doesn't make sense that they go out and they spend a lot of that money on on him because I think they really needed a top holding midfielder or a centre half.
Yeah, agreed. Just on that, actually, on Lacazette, James Suave on Facebook, he's one of the Toronto T-Dot Gunners, says, is Lacazette doomed to the bench or what role will he play for the rest of the campaign?
I think he'll really struggle to get in the side. I don't know how he can play alongside Aubameyang. You spend that much money on Aubameyang, who's for me is one or two levels above Lacazette, and then he's definitely going to play, assuming he's fit. Lacazette has to look in a mirror and decide what he really wants. Does he want to go, you know, back to France or back to Europe and with his tail between his legs, or does he want to like really challenge with a top Premier League team? He needs to work harder. He needs to be in the, you know, the right positions. And for me, his performance against Swansea was shocking. You know, a lot of bad performances, but he was so lazy, standing up there giving them absolutely nothing. And unfortunately, it's been like that too many times this season.
But Lacazette has the Europa League in which Aubameyang can't play. So Lacazette has such an, I think, at his feet, the most realistic way of Arsenal to get back into that top four, to get back into Champions League football, it's so crucial that he plays well. And he has that platform where there's literally not another striker, because Welbeck is not a footballer.
Doesn't count.
But like, there isn't another striker that will play those Europa League games. And he has such an important role till the end of the season that he does well then, and Arsenal go far, semi-final, final, whatever it is. And he can easily, slowly make his way back inside. Like, it's not all doom and gloom for Lacazette, but it's up to him.
I think the key for Lacazette is really to understand, people are lauding this Mkhitaryan Aubameyang partnership, right, and replicating what they did in Dortmund. If Lacazette actually watches that and maybe does something, like tries to figure out what is he doing right that I'm not doing right, then you can replicate that type of thing in the Europa League. Mm-hmm. And on Mkhitaryan, I said it on this podcast, wonderful player. And Arsene Wenger got a decent deal out of the Sanchez thing, better than what he would have gotten from City. So congratulations to him. What Arsenal really needs to be careful of, Mkhitaryan started this season hot. Mm-hmm. Very hot. He started for Arsenal very hot. Can he keep it going? I think he can under the right circumstances, but I have to be very, very careful with him because he's a confidence player. Mm-hmm. And Arsenal's not a place where confidence remains for a very long time.
That's true.
All right, let's go to where he came from, United, beating Huddersfield 2-0. This one was funny. So Jose Mourinho drops Pogba. He doesn't rest him. He drops him after the little spat they had on the sideline from the previous game. And that's Mourinho. He just, like, literally the minute it happened on our little thread, he just goes, and it begins. You can always see when the deterioration of a relationship between Mourinho and Spurs starts. And like, this is the first chip. And you're like, here we go.
One more year. He just really believes in McTominay.
who got absolutely battered all game. He just got slapped left, right, and center.
You know, and all McTominay did was make sideways passes the entire game.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's a young player. He's coming into the team. He maybe didn't expect to play that game. But, you know, he just came in and made sideways passes the whole time.
I mean, that's Pogba assists for you right there, right?
Yeah.
Lay but, off 3 feet to Martial.
Yeah, but overall, football has not been too much fun under Mourinho for some time now as United fans. It's been very difficult to watch.
Well, the first half of this game was difficult to watch. Nothing happened. Sanchez was running into a cul-de-sac all the time. Like I said, McTominay's sideways passes. Although, I was very impressed with McTominay overall. I thought he had played very, very well, which to me suggests, if McTominay and Matic are on the same line, which they were all the time, there was no one breaking from the middle, why not play a 4-3-3 with McTominay, Matic, Pogba? Pogba can release himself. And then you have Alexis, Martial, and Lingard.
Well, he played Lingard at
seems
number 10.
To make, well, Lingard doesn't need to play, right? Yeah. Like, it seems to make more sense to me.
It's too many good ideas for Mourinho.
But you can't play Pogba and alongside Matic. He's too reckless, and he's got no positional sense. The guy does some in every game. It's just world class. But he's a straight player, and in a Mourinho side where he likes to play specialists in every position, he can't play in that holding position. So that for me, they have to find somebody in that position. And I agree, allow Pogba to play higher up. Obviously, you could call it a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, which is what he plays. It's the same kind of thing for me. It's formations merge into each other these days because players are so fit and fluid. And so Pogba has to be that higher up guy in that number 10 role, maybe a little bit of interchange with Sanchez or whoever, you know, obviously front guys move around. But Lukaku's a guy for me, he gets another goal against Huddersfield, but...
Yeah, hasn't scored against the top eight yet.
He can't do it. He's another one that's a bit lazy. He doesn't seem to have the confidence or the quality to really
doesn't have the touch.
The defense.
Well, there was something about Lukaku's game that we discussed earlier. It's like he needs to have the ball when he's facing goal, as opposed to with his back to goal, because he's completely ineffective. He just
And I thought it was the same at Everton. Like, he does improve every year, so there's still a lot, hopefully, a lot of improvement in the guy. But he was £75 million
because he's still 24.
And I know, and he's and he's got a lot of goals for his age, for his country, and with his clubs. But he gives the ball away too many times. He struggles to find space against top teams, and he's going to have to work harder, in my opinion. I think he's carrying a bit too much weight.
He's not exciting enough for like United. Like, to me, United have always been the biggest team in England. They're kind of who they represent England on the European stage. It's not sure the last few years, but United are United. As an Arsenal fan, I completely, you know, confess United are the biggest team in the land. And Lukaku just, as a signing, was never exciting enough, was never flair enough. He's like, I don't know.
It wasn't exciting enough, but even when you look at the options, like, we've talked about this. Like, strikers that are affordable nowadays are not in high supply.
I don't know. Aubameyang for $75 million at the time?
Aubameyang at the time couldn't, no club in the world wanted Aubameyang. For disciplinary reasons, his wage demands, whatever, it didn't make sense for anybody. What I'm saying is this. You have a 24-year-old player that you can mold to who you want, who has a horrendous first touch. I accept that completely. But the fact of the matter is, his goal record was outstanding for his age, better than anybody in world football at that point. You take that gamble.
The thing with Lukaku is that United's game has always, even under Sir Alex Ferguson, has always been based on crosses. Mm-hmm. They cross the ball more than anyone else in the top sides. And you saw it this game. They try and tippy-tappy. Sanchez tries to run in his little circles. The goal comes from Mata on the touchline, just whips it in, Lukaku puts it in. That's what Ashley Young used to do. That's what Valencia does all the time.
Ashley Young has not gone anywhere.
No, but like, United have always been like, every time I watch United, I go, oh, it seems so easy. Just cross it in, you get a goal. And they swayed away
Lukaku's
from that a little bit.
Lukaku's best goals have come from crosses this season.
I think that if Alex Ferguson was 10 years younger and he was still a manager in Manchester United, Harry Kane would be a Manchester United player.
Mm. Yes.
And I think, he, you know, obviously he's never going to be now because it's too late. He's going to cost $200 million or something stupid. But he, to me, was a Manchester United player. And that's something we always say back home. Just have that look, that feel about them. They can handle that prestige. You're playing for that club, like you say, you know, the biggest club in England, one of the biggest clubs in the world, if not the biggest. And just has that presence about him. Lukaku doesn't have that, in my opinion. Harry Kane had it, and they should have went from 2 or 3 years
doesn't
ago.
Like the
and Fergie would have pulled the shirt, and he would have got him and paid whatever it was at the time, because he would have seen that. Mm. He had the vision to see that kind of thing, and the missed
it. Similar to Rooney, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was basically the Rooney 2.0.
The time was crazy. It was like, oh God, this guy's played 20 games, 30 games.
It was $30 million for an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
But Alexis, is he that?
I think
he is.
Is
he that guy that fits that mold that you're referring to?
Yeah, I do. I think he is. I think he can handle playing for Manchester United. I think he's going to get better and better. Now, will he suit a Jose Mourinho team? I'm not so sure because, like I say, it's specialists and areas, and it's going to be some frustrating games for him because he likes to be fluid and free. But I do think that he looks to me like he's a Manchester United player.
It's funny how often, though, that the conversation comes back to, is he a Jose Mourinho player?
Yeah.
Like, there seem to be very few people that actually are, especially when it comes to, like, attacking players. It's just, I don't know, it's kind of sad. All right, should we do the quiz?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Giuseppe Miezza.
Very good.
This one's a special one because we've got four participants.
Three.
I'm not playing.
Oh, yes. Oh, of course. Three. Alex, could you remind us of your buzzer? Stephen Caldwell. Very nice. And Bernie.
That was easy.
Beautiful. Are you guys ready to go straight
in? Yes.
Yep.
Let's do it.
All right. Okay. Question number one. After Manchester City and Manchester United, which club in the EPL has the squad value which is the highest?
That was easy.
Bernie.
Liverpool.
Wrong.
Hi.
Alex.
Chelsea.
Wrong.
Tottenham Hotspur.
That is correct.
What?
Wait, wow. How are you? Yep. Like,
So the
not the, like the fees that they bought them for.
No, the total value of the squad.
Oh, okay.
So for reference, okay, so it's City, which is number one with 713 million.
Jesus.
United second 667 million, and then Spurs 635 million.
Okay. Yeah, Harry Kane's only like 350 million.
Yeah, pretty much half the team.
Fair enough. That makes sense. Yeah.
All right. All right. So the second one is more like two questions in one, but you know, have fun with it. Okay. So which team in the EPL has the oldest squad? And which team has the youngest squad? Steven.
The oldest squad, Everton.
Wrong.
Sorry, go on.
Alex.
I realised you're halfway through. Is the oldest one Arsenal?
No.
The oldest squad is Chelsea.
Wrong.
Oh my
god. Any young, any guess? Any Bonley? Youngest? You're close, but do you want to do youngest squad guesses
yeah.
first?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Youngest squad, Manchester United.
Wrong. Oh my god. These might be hard.
Clearly, it's tough. Youngest Spurs?
No!
Are they in the top six?
Yeah.
They are. Yeah. Liverpool.
Liverpool is the youngest squad, but wow. Mohamed is not participating.
I'll give my points to Alex.
Thank you.
Okay,
full
so
hard work paid
for off. Reference, the oldest squad is Brighton.
Brighton? Oh, okay.
Yeah, the
average age is 28.7 for Brighton, and wow. Liverpool is
25.9. Huh, that's interesting.
That's pretty tight, pretty close between yeah. Yeah. the lot.
Those were hard questions. But okay, last question. And this one's a bit out there, so, you know, have fun with it.
Okay, we're having a lot of fun.
Come right in there with a tackle, you know. So, name one of the top three most aggressive teams in Europe.
Ooh.
As per their
Atletico Madrid.
Very close. It's in that league, but it's not quite that. Alex.
Red Star Belgrade.
It's not the same league, Alex.
Oh, you know, yeah, but there's
a good...
Not fans, players.
Yeah, not fans.
Oh, my God.
Valencia.
Relax, man. I'm going with West Ham.
It was in La Liga.
Oh, you said one of the three. So there's two
the
other
hint.
Ones.
I get the hint. Mahana was actually correct. Valencia is one of the three teams. What it's
you
actually
doing? You can have my
You
point.
Won the quiz. You
it's actually Getafe, Alaves, and then Valencia.
Wait, so the top three in Europe are all in Spain?
All in Spain.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't get that part of what you said. That's okay.
I think that's more about the refereeing in Spain than it is.
I thought they were a bunch of softies in Spain.
Exactly.
Alright, so Watford Chelsea, the Monday game that we didn't get, well, I didn't get to see it, but crazy result. I mean, Bakayoko again, culprit with a horrendous performance.
Two yellows in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's always what you want. But I don't know, Stephen, I'd like to get your opinion on this, because I've looked at the way that Conte has set Chelsea up a lot this season.
Yeah.
And it's with two defensive midfielders, sometimes even three central midfielders to get Fabregas in. And he's kind of abandoned the attacking trio that he had last year with Hazard, striker, Willian.
Yeah.
To get more people into central midfield. And I just don't understand that they need it.
Where do we start? Bakayoko in the face of it looked like a really good sign, and he was tremendous at Monaco. You think, wow, this is probably an upgrade on Matic. That's what I thought. And it was essentially Kante and Matic last season, and I think we've never really talked much about the loss of Costa. That was absolutely huge for this team. I watched this team live about this time last year, the end of January in Liverpool, 1-1 match, and they were absolutely fantastic. The way that they played, the way they were coached, the style of the football, it's very basketball-esque. It's really like sort of set plays, you know. Kante would come towards the ball, it would come to a wide wing back, they'd just flip it into Costa, and everybody would collapse in, you know, in on Costa, who was tremendous at holding the ball up. And it was very strategic and very precise, and everybody, I'm sure there were smarter people than me that could see that, but nobody could handle it. They were just brilliant at it. Wing backs were tremendous as well, and this season they just don't have the same energy. Guys are having bad years, in fairness. Azpilicueta's having a very average season. He's a brilliant player. Kante's not having a great season. So everybody's sort of down on their performances in previous years, which is worrying for me, because it's another sign from Chelsea that there's a lack of kind of personality, team spirit in that squad. And whether it's Mourinho or Conte, two of the, you know, reputedly best managers, man managers in world football in the last 10 years, are not getting the best out of these players. There's something rotten in this football club.
Yeah, I agree with that, because Chelsea won the league under Mourinho.
Yeah.
Then they finished 10th Yeah. Then they won the league again.
Yeah.
And now they're playing badly.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think, though, because we used to have an idea about who the kind of core players yeah. that might cause trouble would be. But when I look at the squad now, I have trouble beyond maybe Hazard, but even he doesn't seem like that much trouble. I have trouble identifying who that is anymore.
Well, Conte doesn't like David Luiz, so maybe that has to do with personality. Sure, no, forget the I don't like him positionally.
Right.
But if you're not going to... If you win a league with the guy and you don't play him beginning of the season, is it because of a personality issue?
I think it's club culture. I truly believe when you have been at a club and you've seen manager go and manager come and you just don't feel like you have that much pressure on you as a player. You just think, we're going to have a slump. They're going to change the manager. Everyone else is going to be okay. So it's like... You're not too worried about yourself as a player. You just think the philosophy and the culture of this club is changing managers.
Yeah.
And I don't know, just I'm wondering if Chelsea are ever going to have a manager for more than two seasons, because when was the last time that happened?
By the way, just to add to what you're saying and to support that, it was very interesting when they lost Matic, and like Steven said, maybe Bakayoko was an upgrade. No one really knew Bakayoko coming into the league, so that was a bit of a gamble in that sense. But it's interesting on the player power side that Matic had a direct line to Abramovich. Conte wasn't the one that said, you can go. He had an agreement with Abramovich. Abramovich said, you can leave.
It's the same with Cech.
And do all these players, do they just sidestep the manager and go straight to the ownership?
And therein lies the problem. You know, it's an ownership level. And they're really, these players kind of know that they're the boss, or the boss is Abramovich, so it's irrelevant who their manager is. It was the same with Jose. They had enough of him. They got him out, a club legend, the guy that won the title more than once for that club. And then Conte, you're thinking, okay, they're not going to mess with this guy. This guy takes, no prisoners. Costa's gone. Luis is out. You know, he's making these decisions. You think it'll have a positive effect in the squad, but it just has even more negative effect. They seem to just be, giving up, down in tools really quickly. And I don't know where they go from here. There's talk of Sarri. What difference is that going to make? They're going to bring a guy. Yeah, it might be quite more exciting. But as soon as these guys decide that something happens, it's against them, they're just going to do the same thing.
But to Alex's point, I think, yes, all this turmoil in the back. But I think Conte is also bringing this on himself a lot with his tactics. I mean, again, he's playing way too many defensive midfielders with three centre-backs behind them. We talked about this a few podcasts before. You watch Chelsea, even when they win a game, the game plan is literally hoof it up to Hazard and Morata and you just hope for a moment of genius.
Yeah.
There isn't like a plan. There isn't, this is exactly how we want to score a goal, because you've got Kante, Bakayoko, sometimes Cesc, they're so deep, they're not even involved in the attacking play.
Fabregas is a big problem, though. Yeah. You know, he's really finished at the top level, and yeah, he'll still play that 40, 50 yard pass, it's sensational, but no mobility. Bakayoko's come in, he's been lazy.
Mm.
Kante's doing three guys working there, and he's having a bit of an off season.
Morata's
not been playing well. No, he's been playing lately, so there's no kind of presence and fall. Hazard gets his space off that, that big figure, that Costa. Morata was hoped to be that guy, he wasn't. I think they should have upgraded the wing back areas. As great as Moses and Alonso were in the title winning season, they're not top players. Yeah, they tried to get Juventus Alexander from Juventus, but that never worked out.
He signed the guy from Roma, didn't he?
Wasn't it Costa defensive again?
Oh, Palmieri.
Oh, Palmieri. Sorry. Yeah.
I don't know.
Costa was a recruit. He's been a bit negative as well. There's just no real. It's a team with Hazard, but apart from Hazard, no real flair in the side.
But shouldn't they still not lose a game to this Watford side that has been terrible, which cost Marco Silva his job? They've been so bad, you would think at least they would win this game.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. I don't know. Sorry, Rashid.
No, go ahead.
Conte showed his flexibility when, at the start of last season, they lost a few games, they got battered by Arsenal, he switched to the three, and introduced a new system, they went on an incredible run. And since then, obviously that season, he didn't need to change anything because they were brilliant. But this season, it hasn't been working anywhere near as much as it should be. And we've seen no flexibility from him.
Well,
tactically.
So I think we saw that tweet from a Chelsea fan saying something like that Conte's flexibility last season won the title, his inflexibility, whatever the opposite of that word is, this season is just getting, because he's, again, maybe the three at the back, it's time to let go of that a little bit and play with some more flair, add an attacking player. But the problem is, they don't even have one. I get it, William.
Yeah.
Name on paper, fine. But like, what happens? You drop a Pedro or a William there, you don't go and win the league. Like, they don't have the quality regardless of the formation, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, there's something missing at this club. There's something going on behind the scenes. And 7 goals in 2 games, which is 30% of the goals they've conceded all season, has happened in the last 2 games. So there's something that's going to happen. But another point is, with the managers going in and out, it's nothing different than a Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Now, they just got new managers until it actually clicked.
Right.
Now Zidane's going to maybe get sacked as well. So, I mean, it's just a revolving door at the end of the day. So how can we sit here and say, yeah, they'll get a new manager every 2 seasons, and that's like different from what's actually happening.
To be fair, they win the league every time they get a new manager.
And
they
still sack him a year or 2 later. Yeah. It's the same point. Yeah, it's a great point. It's the same kind of scenario where there's just a club with turnover. There's no other way like looking at it. But if they're really going to get consistency and challenge for Champions League, which is basically what Abramovich wants, or we're led to believe what he really, really wants, then they're going to have to find some consistency with a guy, whoever it is, whoever, and just say, no matter what, no player power is going to win here. I'm going to back you for the 3 years and you're going
to
build something.
But you have to fix the recruitment at the same time.
Yeah. Because, and not send so many players on loan and turn out to be incredible.
I do think that Conte has a point in terms of, and we don't know the inner workings of this, but the players that they've brought in are not it. And he said it, I think, the other day where he said, why bring in 8 players when you can bring in 2 for 100 million or something. Yeah.
He literally said when your only option on the bench is Ross Barkley. This is like 2 days after signing him. Then it's like, you just signed the guy. Yeah. Come on, he doesn't want Ross Barkley. Like,
no.
The quality of players they've signed recently is just not good enough. I don't think the squad is good enough. He's right to complain that they haven't really brought in anyone. I mean, Bakayoko aside, who was supposed to be good, there isn't quality in the side. Hazard, and Morata's his first season in the league. You know, he's not supposed to take you to
being a starter at a football
anywhere.
Club.
He's played something like 8 games. Like,
I was very disappointed they didn't get Andy Carroll. I mean, it just would have been so much
Giroud,
fun.
We didn't talk about him.
Giroud. Where is Kante? Because he was 2 players last season. Where is he this season?
Well, now he's 3. That's a step too far.
He has to be 3.
Yeah. No, I will be interesting. It will be interesting to watch how Giroud fits into this team for the second half of the season.
Also, before we move on, I have to say, last season they also benefited from the level of competition not being as high as this season. They didn't have that Man City juggernaut. United weren't at it, etc., etc.
They also didn't have Europe.
Exactly. They didn't have Europe. That was a big one.
Can I just say, the level of competition, I give you the City part, and maybe, well, Man United improving, even though I'm annoyed, but improving, I'll give you that. But the rest of it, it's pretty. If Manchester United are 5 points clear of Chelsea and we don't really feel great about them, shows how poor them, Liverpool, Spurs, and Arsenal have actually been in real context. It's been very, very bad.
Sure. I mean, that's how Leicester won the league, right? So
yeah.
So Manchester United are Leicester.
Yeah.
Speaking of City.
Yeah.
1-1 with Burnley away. That Danilo goal, though. That was delicious.
You know when you see a replay and you're like, wait, who is that? And you're like, no. Like, it can't be. There's no way. But Burnley, not a lot of teams, and I don't think a lot of teams have actually gone to Turf Moor and got results. I mean, I remember we were discussing this when Arsenal gone there and got a result, and everyone's like, yeah, whatever, it's just Burnley. I'm like, people will not get 3 points. Yeah.
Arsenal won 1-0, I believe. Yeah. United won 1-0, but that just shows you how
it's hard to play against that team. Very difficult. And they did a really good job. Burnley played fantastic. Well, let's start at the beginning. Pep named 6 substitutes.
Disgrace.
He's claiming that he doesn't have enough money to build a squad, and it's like
he's a weird guy.
And then at the post-match interview, he's just like all like annoyed and just doesn't want
to
talk about
it. Did you hear the explanation though?
No.
Okay, so just to balance this out a bit, Bernie, you can stop complaining. he was questioned, and they said, "Well, you could have named a youth team player."
Yeah.
And he said, "Yes, I could have, but they played the night before."
Right.
So if I name them in my squad for this game, they can't play.
But he's not going to play
before, and he's not going to play even if he's on my bench.
Yeah.
So I don't see this as
a big
deal.
He's trying to make a point.
Yes.
And he's making the point in a way that is ridiculous, because his excuse for not playing a youth player was because they played the night before. That's the first thing. Any other manager, if they identify a hole in their squad, they bring a youth team player
in. Don't play
him
that night.
He trains with the first team squad, and he will not play with the youth. So my point is, that statement he made is completely invalid.
To be fair, that is a very good point. I never thought about
this
that.
This is what managers do.
No,
this
sure, you can do. Identify someone and have them, but he said it's more valuable for them to play in the game than to come and sit on the bench and not play.
Yeah, but don't make an excuse about it.
I disagree with that, though, from Pep, because I think it would be way more valuable for a lad who's never played for the first team to travel and to see what it takes and to see how these, world-class superstars prepare for a game. So But arguably, I think he'll learn more for that one experience on the bench, even though he's not going to come on, from 10, 15 youth team games.
But arguably, wouldn't it have been someone like Brahim Diaz, or, you know, one of the players that has been in the squad countless times anyway, and never actually gets on the pitch?
Well, why not bring up a lad who, you know, is the future, but is nowhere near ready? I've always had a problem with six on the bench. It's always a political statement to a board or a chairman, and I just think it's pathetic, because there's so much you can get or give to a player by having him involved in a first team squad, especially that first team squad. You'd learn so much just sitting in the bus next to, you know, whoever, De Bruyne or Silva or Aguero or any of these guys.
Well, not Aguero, watching them play with their phone. Not Aguero, someone else.
I don't know. For someone who literally made his name and put the stake in the ground at Barcelona about, I would rather not sign a $50 million striker and I would rather promote someone from the youth. For someone to make that statement and then put six on the bench?
Yeah, but talk is easy when your youth is Iniesta, Xavi, Messi, Puyol, Busquets. Like, talk is easy.
But
then.
You still have to try. Because since he left Barcelona, he's not promoted one youth player.
Also,
not
didn't City spend like a gazillion million dollars in a new youth system and training?
They built a facility. A huge stadium for that. Are you serious?
Anyways, back to the game. Sandaj had a nice... Alex, tell us about his Euro this down.
Oh, he's just... He said that having Edison was like having Ronald Koeman in goal. Quite enjoyed that quote.
Probably during his playing time.
Yeah.
Right? Edison made a brilliant save from, who was it?
Aaron Lennon.
Yeah, new signing at Burnley. He played well.
Good play. Are we going to skip over Sterling?
He skipped over that. The best part of it was that delayed reaction when he just dropped to the ground.
Yeah.
Like, he just stood there and then he just decided to fall to the ground and
unbelievable. It was like a video game. It really was.
Yeah, like
when
glitching.
I can see the goal, you start hitting.
But it was a great team move, as usual. It was beautiful. Yeah. And you wouldn't have thought he would do that on this one.
No. Rob Kyle Walker from a brilliant assist.
And then Kyle Walker with a brilliant assist for Burnley by not doing his job defensively.
Yeah, true. Burnley, great point for Burnley there. I mean, City have only lost one game all season against Liverpool. Question is, are they going to lose again? I don't know. But they've pretty much run away with the league at this point. I mean,
they're 69 points.
How many points is that? 13 points away from United. That's with 20 plus goal difference.
Yeah.
Like on United, it's...
That's not... There's a third of the season left. There's like 12 more league games and they already have 70 points.
Right.
Yeah, 69 points.
They could actually break 100 points, I think. They're incredible. And even on Saturday, they were unbelievable. Their football, Gundogan, was amazing. The way they moved from... defence through midfield to attack, just so fluent. And credit to Burnley, you know, we've talked a lot about teams tonight with kind of bad attitudes and bad team spirit. Well, there's the team with the best team spirit in the entire league. A bunch of guys, no disrespect, just
they're not that good,
not even some of them not even near Premier League quality, and they're sitting in the top half of the table. It's remarkable. And credit to the manager and the football club and the attitude of the players, because they were getting destroyed, is a strong word, but really, really outplayed for long periods of the game, just hanging in there, 1-0 down, and they turned the game in a few moments. You know, they hit the bar, they received some momentum, the crowd got behind them, and all of a sudden they get that equalising goal. And yeah, they probably don't deserve it, but their spirit deserved it. So I think just they're the story of the Premier League, in a sense, for me. Both these teams, one because they're so incredibly good, and the other one because they're overachieving to a level that we've not seen a team do in the Premier League for a long time.
Yeah, and it's actually nice because of the incredible run that Burnley went on. Now when they get results that you'd expect, like a draw here or a loss there or whatever, Dyche is able to come out and be like, yeah, we still did the right things.
Yeah.
We didn't get the result, but it's all right, we move on to next week. He doesn't have to despair about it.
They stick to the plan, you know, their plan, what suits their guys. It's not pretty, it's not exciting, but it's the plan. And to have 25 people buy into a plan is just remarkable management, because you've always got one guy who thinks they're smarter or they're more experienced, or no, they want to do it their way, and they're going in their little clique in the changing room and trying to spread their word. I've seen it in every changing room I've been in, almost. When you have a changing room where everybody just buys into what the plan is, and you have a leader or a manager who has a hierarchy and a captain and a leadership structure that says, this is how we're going to be great, and buys into it, then you get success. And you've seen it with these guys. Ben Mee's a captain, terrific. Like, the lad's really limited in talent, but he's been unbelievable. He makes up for it in heart and determination and leadership.
Yeah. I was reading Shaq Ferguson's book Leading last night, and he's literally said there are loads of players that are talented, and there are loads of players like Gary Neville who are not as talented, make up with it with hard work. And he said, I would pick the latter every day over the talented player, because that guy will work so hard to get me what I want, that other guy might
be flaky. I think someone who's quite good that falls in the category, just again, Beckham. I'm slightly biased, is Beckham. Beckham has obviously the natural talents that have to be there, but he would not be anywhere near, because he's not naturally a flair player, he's not fast, he doesn't have, and it's one of those where you need some of that. Ronaldo, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo's obviously got the abundance of talent, but he wouldn't be where he is today without his hard work and etc. etc.
The best thing you can get, sorry to interrupt, I want to make this point, but is you know what you're going to get for your players.
Right?
So you wake up on a Saturday morning and you're like, I know what we're going to be the day. And our talent performance might be this level or that level, but I know we're getting that effort and that work rate. And, you know, at Chelsea right now, they don't know what they're going to get. They don't know what they're going to get for 5-6 of their starters. Man City know what they're going to get for 8-9-10, you know, and yeah, Sterling had an off day. Burnley know what they're going to get for their 8-9-10. Once you have 8-9 players playing at their level, at their thing, you win a lot of games, and they've proved it this season.
Yeah, and that's when you can put Adel Tarot in at like number 10.
Okay, I need everyone to promise that we're going to quickly run through quickly. Leicester won, Swansea won. Mahrez is on some sort of strike. He never got his move to City in January, etc., etc. His replacement in Diabate looked quite good.
I like him.
He looked okay. Iheanacho playing well. Great assist to Vardy.
Mm-hmm. Next game.
And yeah.
Wait. Sorry. I know.
Alex broke a rule.
You know he has a quote.
Every week, Carvajal. I love it. We were planning to give more pace and attack with Wilfred Bony, but in the last 10 minutes, Leicester were more organised and created more noise. So more pace and attack with Wilfred Bony.
It's all relevant, though.
Who was up there like before?
Also, he did say something about his injury. He said, when one swan falls, another swan flies.
Since we're giving Carvajal quotes, they asked him about Mahrez not playing. He goes, something about how you live next to your neighbor, you say hi, but you don't actually care what they're doing. Yeah. So don't ask me this question.
Brighton beat West Ham 3-1. Izquierdo with a brilliant goal.
What a goal.
From the left-hand side. Doesn't that mean left in Spanish? Or right?
Izquierda.
Yeah.
Izquierda.
Brilliant. Like, he meant that. He meant to kind of put in. Obviously, he took off his shirt. He couldn't believe what was happening.
Yeah. He was asked how he was going to celebrate, and he was like, I'm going to go home. I'm actually a bit lonely. I'm just going to call my mum.
Oh, poor lad.
Heartbreaking.
Oh, dear. I'm sure he can find a girlfriend in Brighton.
Yeah.
Hang out with Dele Alli.
I tell you what.
We'll get there.
This was a big result for Brighton, in all honesty. Because, you know, as this season goes on, we're not going to care about the top. We're going to be bothered about the bottom. So it was a big win for Brighton at home to West Ham. And West Ham, who you think is just going to, you know, creep at it, suddenly you're like, maybe not, because, again, attitude and spirit and personality.
Yeah, they're only 3 points.
It something like from 11th to relegation zone is like 3 points?
Yeah,
everybody's 12th, in the relegation 12th, zone. Yeah. Bournemouth beat Stoke 2-1 coming from behind. I mean, honestly, if you're going to let... what's his name? Score a header? Shaqiri? He deserves to lose the game.
Yeah.
So they made up for it. Because if Shaqiri scores a header, you just might as well liquidate.
Yeah, I covered this game. It was an intriguing game, actually. Stoke were brilliant in the first half. Ndiaye, the new signing for Galatasaray, was tremendous. He was everywhere. Shaqiri with a bit of flair. Even Crouch was playing very well. You know, there was real cohesion there. And Bournemouth are another strange side, because it wasn't clicking at all in the first half. And you think, is this going to go down, you know, 2-3-0 to Stoke? And they come out the second half, completely dominated the game, fully deserved their two goals, and another massive win for the bottom battle. Because these teams like Bournemouth, I think, are going to be safe, more than safe, but Brighton need to win their home games.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going to be huge.
Right. West Brom lost to Southampton 3-2. I mean, West Brom are obviously the best team in the world, because they're trying to field two Egyptian centre-backs.
Yeah.
So, you know. Clearly,
they won your vote.
Yeah, for sure. The pyramid scheme they're building. Lamina with a great goal.
What a hit.
Yeah, just beautiful.
Anything you want to say, Rashane?
It was great. Even I scored a good goal.
We get a weekly football update from about Rashane playing football every week. I don't know how he does this all the time. Every week.
I mean, I don't know if he wants to talk about this week. He missed the penalty.
Yeah.
I did score a goal, though.
You did.
Did it, like, just hit you and go in?
It did. It was something like that. It almost missed.
In West Brom, Southampton, they both started their new strikers. So West Brom started Sturridge, Southampton started Carrillo. They bought for 20 million from Monaco. They had one shot on target between them. So
like half a shot each?
Yeah, half a shot each. A scuff.
All right, so top of the table, really quickly, City are going to win the league. Who's going to go down? Huddersfield.
Newcastle.
Brighton. Mm-hmm. I think maybe...
I hope Swansea.
You know what? It's really tough on this one.
I go with
maybe Swansea.
I think maybe West Brom. I've got a feeling. Yeah, well, they're not the reaction of Pardew.
They can grind it out.
Even Johnny Evans in defence.
The thing is with Pardew, it's either a run of great form or a run of horrendous form. Like there tends to be very little in between. I don't know.
Newcastle will be struggling as well.
Yeah.
I think Palace will just have enough. They'll probably sneak a few out. West Ham, but
apparently Zaha might be out for a while.
Yeah, that would be a blow.
Oh, then there's
that right? Yeah.
Oh, that's bad.
Anyway, all right, let's do some mumus.
Yes.
Happy mumu. One thing we are no sha, mumu no fit sleep forever. One day mumu go wake up.
So a quick refresher for people tuning in recently. A mumu is a fool, an idiot, someone that we just don't like, and we like to focus on those people outside the pitch of football. So this week, we'll start with the entire organization of West Ham.
Yeah, not to alienate anyone, but yeah.
Literally, the opposite of what
you're... Exactly. So this week, Tony Henry, who was the director of recruitment at West Ham, was sacked after making comments basically saying they don't want to sign African players... because they have a bad attitude.
He basically almost just said they dance too much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But the funny thing was that this came out in the Daily Mail and they took a moral high ground. Like, you do this every week about immigrants.
Asylum seekers.
Yeah. But if he wasn't sacked for that, he should have been sacked anyway, because apparently they made a £25 million deadline day bid for Joe Allen. So
Club record. On Joe Allen.
And I like Joe Allen, but like...
But money means nothing now anymore. Yeah. Everybody's going to be a record, because...
But it's Joe Allen.
No, you might as well... Yeah, I don't know.
Really? Okay. Mm.
Yeah. Do we have any other moments? I mean, nothing really comes to mind.
The only thing I kind of want to talk about... That is, and I'm going to say whoever hacked Dele Alli, you get Mumu of the Week as well. Yeah. I mean, we can bans this all we want. Yeah. It's on Twitter, so if you really want to enjoy some bans, go on Twitter.
Yeah, I've also got it on my phone.
I sent it to you. That's the worst part. He's a 20-year-old kid who now has to deal with himself exposed on the internet, literally.
Yeah.
And it's not something we really should be joking about, because if I remember when I was 20, if that was online, I would be thinking I'd be dead because my Nigerian parents would kill me.
Yes.
They would actually just dig my grave and throw me in at that point. Alive. So it's a sensitive subject in that sense, and I feel like...
Well, at the end of the day, your privacy got hacked, regardless of what the video is. It could have been a video of anything. It didn't have to be that. But at the end of the day, your privacy got hacked. No one deserves that, regardless of what the content is. That's Mumu. The Mumu is also that. Why are you cheating on your girlfriend and your wife? That's Mumu number two. Mumu number three is, if you're going to do it, why are you filming it?
Like, I'm smiling and laughing in the video. That was pretty bad.
One thing that's consistent with his character, you know, on and off the field. He's not really focused on what he's doing in the ring.
To be fair, he's had a pretty bad season. Pretty bad season. I mean, that's probably a high for him, if anything.
Oh,
anyways, God. We said we're not going to bounce this, so we should probably just...
Yeah, let's quit while we're ahead.
Happy Mumu. One thing we are no sha, Mumu no fit sleep forever. One day, Mumu go wake up.
All right, let's talk about Toronto FC. Stephen, they announced the signing of Gregory Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Quality player.
Yeah.
Why is he number 9?
Don't know. Detest that. I think you should always wear a number. It's in your area, but I guess number 9 was free and he wanted to take it. But expect him to get forward a lot and probably score a few goals.
So he's obligated now.
Maybe worthy of the number 9.
At least let him take the penalties.
Yeah. Something. when William Gallas was number 10, was taking over like Burkham.
That
was
a disgrace.
Yeah, anyways, but he's an exciting player. I think he's always kind of teetered on that kind of, is he going to make it to a big team? Is he going to...
Yeah.
And it just never really happened for him, but... Exciting.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think of the signing? Yeah.
Very good signing. I've not watched him play for a number of years, so it's difficult to be too objective about it. But he looks like he's a very good player. He played in the World Cup final 8 years ago. Played for PSG, played in some great clubs. He's been faltering a little bit, but looks like a brilliant signing in a position that TFC really needed to improve. Right wing back, I thought Steve Bettishaw was fantastic, but if they wanted to move to that next level, they needed a really attacking quality right wing back in Van der Wiel, as he's being called. Wheel? Yeah, they're calling him Van der Wiel, right. Which is strange to me. I called him Van der Wiel for years, but I think that's how he pronounced his name. Is going to be good for TFC and another upgrade. Does TFC improve their 11, in my opinion? It makes the squad a little bit more vulnerable just because of the salary cap, but you know, they want to compete and they want to try and win CONCACAF Champions League, so they need better players.
Fair enough. This is also someone who got in a fight with Zlatan, so
brings some, fearless.
Brings some spirit.
Yeah. Take it.
Where else do you think the squad needs strengthening? And clearly right back was an issue.
I think the squad needs a little bit of strengthening, and I'm contradicting what I just said, because as the 11 improves, I think the squad gets a little bit weaker and you need to take some chances on draft picks and younger guys. I think central defence is another area that's a bit of an issue. I think TFC are going to start 4-4-2 Diamond, which what they finished in MLS Cup against Seattle Sounders. So I think Mavinga's great, he's got the pace. Drew's getting a little bit older, although he has that experience and that leadership quality, but sometimes I think he can look a little bit vulnerable in that position. So Zavalet and Haglund might run them close. They have to again step up another level, which hopefully for TFC they will do. Midfield for me, they still need another midfielder or so. Bradley and Vasquez are terrific, but Osorio and Delgado can be a little bit consistent, so I think they'll try and bring in another midfielder, and probably in the summer, they're saying, because of the cap and stuff, but they need another quality player there.
Okay, what do you think of left back, because we lost Raheem Edwards now to Montreal.
And
I thought he was a fantastic player.
He was good, he was very good, and it was a big loss, especially going over to TFC's Canadian rivals. Montreal, I think, was a great pickup for them. It was in TFC didn't protect Raheem, and then LAFC traded him and Raitala for Simon. So that was an interesting one. I don't think they expected them to go to a Canadian team. That could cause them a lot of problems, just PR wise and stuff. Although, in fairness to TFC, they have Justin Morrow. They're going to give him a new deal. He's probably the best left back, one of the best left backs in the league. Okay. He'll start every game, and he has been fit in his career because he's a very healthy guy. He looks after his body, but he's starting to get to that age near 30 where if something goes wrong, they have very little cover in that position. So
Ashton
could be an issue.
Bit of a drop off.
They have Ash, who's been there a while, but you know, in fairness, I think Raheem was stepping ahead of Ashton. But Ashton again gets another opportunity, but they'll be hoping Morrow can play 90%.
Is Endo still on the squad?
Endo's came back as a trialist, so they're going to have another look at him. I think they're probably going to upgrade if they can, and if they can't, Endo will get a contract.
I felt good about him first couple of games he played.
That was a long time ago.
I really hoped he would make it. I don't know, like draft pick, and like it was a nice story.
We're talking about Endo, right?
Yeah.
That's because he's Captain Tsubasa. That's why he's
right. That's probably why, yeah.
I just wanted him for the puns. They're endless. All right, so the start of questions from the internet. The first one does involve TFC. So Justin Bernard says, does Stephen think that we can make MLS Cup for a third year in a row?
Yeah, I do. I think TFC are still very strong on paper. I think it'll get tougher and tougher as the league gets stronger and as TFC become more and more the team to beat. The kind of cup final, as they say, every time they head, certainly away from home, they're going to have to keep up that strong home form at BMO Field. But I don't see anything to suggest that they're going to lose that favourite tag.
Fair enough. Sticking with MLS, Gavin Wiggins says, and I think we asked something similar to this time last year, but maybe things have changed since then. So he says, do you think MLS is at championship level, as in English championship?
Yeah.
Or how does it compare? And also, why the trend of Scotsmen coming to MLS recently?
Yeah, that's been great to see. Danny Wilson, a guy that actually I played for Scotland with. He made his debut. I played up in Aberdeen against, I can't remember who we played. Should know. Estonia, maybe it was. But anyway, you know, a lad I know, good player. He's just went to Colorado Rapids. Where is MLS in regards to English football? Really difficult to place it. I do think there's a lot of quality players, a lot of attractive football. I don't know if it's as tough as the championship.
Tactically?
tactically, I think it's behind. I think when you look at the championship now and some of the numbers that people are playing, signings, you know, 10, 50 million people.
Wolves are incredible.
They could
probably be in the Europa
Villa
League,
are paying, you know, Snodgrass and Terry. And
yeah.
You look at their squad and some of the salaries they'll be paying, I think it's hard to argue that MLS is at championship level. And championship is the best second league in maybe world football, certainly in Europe. It's tough. It's so tough. So MLS doesn't have that tough. But I think MLS is quality. And I think it's difficult because I think we should enjoy MLS for what it is and just kind of, it's a North American league. It's soccer here. It's different. It's summer soccer. It's stadiums are getting better. It's fun. I think it's quite decent football to watch. Most teams try and get the ball down and play it around. That's not the case in the championship. 80% of the games are difficult to watch because it's just a grind.
The stakes, are too high.
It's cold. It's miserable, you know. So, aesthetically, I'd rather watch MLS. I think championship's probably a little stronger.
I'd agree with that. Sometimes when you're watching the MLS, you never know when a goal is going to happen. Yeah. And that keeps it exciting.
Yeah, true. Mo, did you have something? Or?
No, you're good.
All right. So
gonna have a chip, though.
Yeah, sure. We'll move on to Scotland. I mean, you probably could have predicted a couple of questions here, but Alan Gorman says, "What do you think about Walter Smith rumours and also you know, the rumours about your brother applying for the job?"
Yeah, well, my brother. I don't know the Walter Smith rumours actually, but he was a terrific manager, a manager I worked under with Scotland, and one of the best I'd ever. Ever experienced, just a brilliant man manager and a good tactician and a very scary man, a man that you did not want to cross. So I don't know if he's wants that again or he's at the age where he still has the appetite for that. He's pretty much done everything in the game, so I'd be surprised if he wants to come back to the kind of hassle and the scrutiny of Scotland.
Fair enough.
But regards to my brother, it's something that he really wants. He's a young manager. He started at Wigan. He won League One Manager of the Year in his first full season. Wigan played some of the most attractive football they had seen in League One, and he did a tremendous job. Since then, he's struggled a little bit, as most young managers do. He got sacked at Wigan, and he took a job at Chesterfield he probably shouldn't have took. I think it was a level that was alien to him, League Two. He played at the top pretty much his whole career, and he was asking for concepts and dealing with players that was right. Difficult for him to deal with. No excuses, didn't do a good job, and I think he'd be fantastic for Scotland. I think he has the passion and the commitment, and he has some great ideas, and I know he works extremely hard at what he does, and his experience as a player, you know, he's one of the few, kind of, it must be 20, 30 players who have won 50 plus caps. He's one of them. He's scored a goal against France, probably Scotland's most famous goal in the last 15 years, and he has, you know, a great love for his country like most of us do. So why not? He certainly deserves an interview, in my opinion.
Right. I think TFC fans can help with the campaign.
Right? Yeah,
I think we're strong enough. Yeah. I think we're strong enough online to do that. Andreas K says, are you willing to put your name in the hat for Scottish FA Chief Executive?
Well, I don't think I'm ready for that, but it's something that obviously I would aspire to do maybe one day, but not at this age. I think that's a job for a pretty serious man. It's certainly in the kind of area where I'd like to be working. I'm not sure. I'm who knows, but I don't think I'm going to be a head coach. I think I'm going to be more of a kind of front office chief executive type role, and it's something that one day I'd like to do. But I think Scotland would be best served to go and get a guy who's, you know, a little bit more experienced and prepared for that job.
Fair enough. It's also hard to leave Toronto, no?
Yeah, exactly. Not in the winter, is it?
All right, Darren McNulty, friend of the pod. He's got two questions. The first one, first is serious. What are your thoughts on the European Nations League?
Interesting, actually. It might be quite good. I think that it's better than just an average friendly. I think it's nice that they're kind of going to grade the teams as well, and you're going to play against sides that are sort of, I don't like when you get a friendly against a team who are not very good and one who's really good. I just think it becomes a bit negative. So yeah, it's something they're trying to kind of create more competition in the friendlies.
Right, Darren's second question is, so he's actually from County Donegal in Ireland.
Right.
And his local team is Finn Harps.
Finn Harps. I know Finn Harps. Oh, I played there, actually.
No way.
Yeah.
He will be delighted.
Yeah, because his question is, up the harps?
Yeah, his question is, will you say up the harps?
Up the harps.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, Darren. No more requests ever.
Encore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we'll end with Callum Gordon. Having done both, what's the better feeling, winning the championship outright or winning the playoff final at Wembley?
Oh,
I love that question.
Yeah. It's a very hard question to answer. I think that when you win any league, it's always amazing. You know, you're clearly the best team in that league, and it was phenomenal. I did it when I was younger, when I played for Sunderland, and I did it with a club who were, in my opinion, should be in the Premier League, a big club who are expected to be at that level. So even though it was great, it was sort of what we expected from day one. With Burnley, it was really different because back then Burnley were not expected to be in the Premier League. They were a club who were just kind of languishing in the bottom half of the Championship. And we built something really great, and we had a feeling of the momentum and the spirit that we had, but no idea where it was going to end. And to end it at Wembley, which was a stadium I always wanted to play at, it was really important to me if I could play there at least once in my career. And to walk these steps and lift that trophy, it feels more,
yeah,
it feels better, you know. But yeah, and you have to remember, we finished fifth that season, so there's four better teams than us. So, you know, let's put it in perspective. It's when you're in a league campaign, it's about 46 games in the Championship, and so for me, league winners.
Yeah,
Have to see it.
Fair enough.
Cool. No, I just that's really exciting because I was just thinking, yeah, like, is it? It's more like a cup at that point,
yeah,
and it's like,
yeah,
winning the. And which one do you celebrate more? Because in the league, you think I need to win next game, but if I don't, I have the next game.
Yeah.
But if I, like, I don't know. It's
I mean,
different.
The playoff final is always like the most exciting game.
Yeah,
it's
incredible.
It's amazing.
It's
got a big money.
So
game,
much
right?
money.
Yeah.
Banked on it. It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Wolves will be delighted, but they'll have won it by, you know,
yeah,
March. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's where we will leave it. Stephen, thank you so much for your
Thanks,
time.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure.
Hopefully, we'll have you on in another year's time.
Hope so.
We'll see if MLS is the stand of the championship by then. All right, guys. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Alex.
See you next week.
Peace.
See ya.
Thank you for downloading the Koshcast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh, and for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.